Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really getting into it with a major figure, Jean-Paul Sartre, and his book, What is Literature? It's a demanding read, defining what a writer's job actually is.
It really is. Published right after World War II, you know, it's less like a quiet essay and more like a philosophical call to arms. Sartre basically argues literature isn't just passive art. It's action, social, political action.
Right. And that's our mission for this deep dive, to really understand what Sartre meant by literature, engagé, committed literature. And it feels incredibly relevant now, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Every time you hear a content creator, maybe a journalist, say they're just entertaining or being objective and sort of exempt from responsibility, well, they're bumping right up against Sartre's big question. Can anyone creating content truly be neutral?
And Sartre's answer is a resounding no. Definitely not. To get why he felt so strongly, we need to look at the man himself. Jean-Paul Sartre lived 1905 to 1980, huge figure in 20th century French philosophy, basically the father of existentialism.
And that core idea of existentialism, existence precedes essence, is key here, isn't it?
It's everything. The idea that we're born without a predefined purpose and we make ourselves through our choices, our actions. We are, as he put it, radically free.
Radically free, but also radically responsible.
Precisely. If our choices define us, then every action, every choice carries weight. And for Sartre, this flows directly into his literary theory. The writer works with language, the tool of meaning, so they just can't escape the ethical weight of their own free act of creation.
I really like that connection. It's not some detached literary critic. It's a philosopher applying his core beliefs to writing. And it helps that Sartre wasn't just thinking about this stuff in an armchair.
No, he practiced what he preached. He was a successful novelist, think Nausea, a playwright, No Exit, and a really active political figure, especially during the French Resistance. He lived it.
He definitely had the credentials. And didn't he also turn down the Nobel Prize?
He did, yeah, in 1964. His reason was pure Sartre. A writer shouldn't let themselves become an institution. It fits perfectly with his whole philosophy of commitment and freedom. He really walked the talk.
Okay, so let's dive into the book itself, this manifesto. The main idea seems pretty clear. The writer has this unavoidable duty.
Unavoidable is the word. A social responsibility to use language to disclose the world, to show its complexities, and crucially, its injustices.
It's about tearing down that image of the writer locked away in an ivory tower.
Exactly. The purpose of writing, for Sartre, is to appeal directly to the reader's freedom. By showing something, maybe a social wrong, the writer basically makes the reader confront it, makes them acknowledge their own responsibility, maybe to act, maybe just to think differently. It's a direct hit against that whole art for art's sake idea.
Okay, so how does he build this argument? You said it's structured.
Very much so. He starts with language itself, what it is.
Yeah.
Then he moves into the psychology, the relationship between writer and reader. And finally, he anchors the writer in their specific time and place, their historical situation. It goes from like linguistics to ethics.
And it all kicks off with this big distinction in chapter one, what is writing? The split between prose and poetry.
A huge split, absolutely fundamental for him. He sets up this rigid separation.
So prose,
yeah.
How does he define that?
Prose uses words as signs. Think of them as tools, transparent pointers. Like words in a news report, you look through them to the event they describe. They're utilitarian. The prose writer names things, especially things people might prefer to ignore, like injustices. And that act of naming, for Sartre, is action. It's action by disclosure. Once named, it's out there. You can't pretend it doesn't exist in the same way.
Okay, makes sense. But then poetry.
Poetry, for Sartre, is totally different. The poet treats words as things in themselves, like paint or stone. They focus on the word's sound, its texture, its rhythm. The poem becomes an object, sort of self-contained. It doesn't point beyond itself in that same direct instrumental way that prose does.
That feels, well, really strict. I mean, can't poetry also reveal truth? Can't a powerful metaphor make you see injustice just as clearly? Is all political poetry just useless in his view?
That's exactly the pushback people have. And yeah, from Sartre's specific, very logical framework here, the answer is kind of yes. It's useless for the kind of direct commitment he's demanding. Because poetry, in his view, isn't using words as transparent signs aiming at the world. It's creating an aesthetic object. So he exempts poets from this specific duty, focusing the demand squarely on prose writers, novelists, journalists, essayists. Their tool is meant to act on the world.
It's a necessary boundary for his argument, even if it feels a bit limiting to us now.
Right. It clears the ground for his main point about prose.
Okay, so if we accept that premise about prose being action, Chapter 2 asks, why write? What's the motivation if your job is just to disclose reality?
Well, it gets into this interesting paradox. The writer tries to capture the world, maybe give it some permanence through words, but the book itself, it's just ink on paper. It's inert. It doesn't do anything.
Until someone reads it.
Exactly. The work only comes alive. It's only realized through the consciousness of a reader. So the very act of writing prose becomes this fundamental appeal to the reader's freedom. You, the reader, have to choose to engage and bring that world to life.
And that's where this ethical core comes in what he called the pact of generosity.
That's it. It's this kind of unspoken agreement built on mutual trust. The writer offers their vision, their disclosed world. The reader then generously lends their consciousness, their freedom, to make that world real in their mind. It's a collaboration.
A co-creation.
Yeah. Right. The book isn't just the writer's anymore.
But that raises a huge question, doesn't it? If I, as the reader, am essential to making the work morally complete, does that mean reading isn't just passive consumption anymore? Am I now somehow responsible for the world the author showed me?
Sartre would say, absolutely yes, you are implicated. Because the whole thing, writing and reading, is built on freedom. The writer freely creates, the reader freely realizes. So it follows for Sartre that the subject of literature, what it's ultimately about, must also be freedom.
Meaning?
Meaning a book that uses this free act of writing and reading to argue against freedom or to justify oppression. Well, that's a deep contradiction for Sartre. It breaks the pact. It uses freedom to deny freedom.
That's a powerful, almost demanding view of literature. Okay, so if this literature is about freedom, who is it for? Chapter 3 asks, for whom does one write? He's not talking about writing for posterity, is he?
No, not at all. He's very insistent on that. The writer must write for a concrete audience, their contemporaries, not some vague idea of humanity down the line.
Because the writer is always stuck in their own time and place?
Exactly. They are in a situation, as he puts it, defined by their class, their culture, the political fights of their day. He actually uses history to make this point. He looks back at the 18th century, the Enlightenment writers like Voltaire, Diderot.
Right, challenging the old regime.
Yes, he saw them as the ideal committed writers. They were the critical voice of the rising middle class, the bourgeoisie, using prose as a weapon for liberation. They had a clear audience fighting for freedom.
A golden age of commitment, he called it.
Pretty much. But then what happened in the 19th century, after that bourgeoisie class actually gained power?
The writers became, less relevant.
They became alienated. The audience that had championed them was now the establishment. So many writers retreated. They turned inward. And that's when you get the rise of art for art's sake. Celebrating beauty, form, often celebrating the uselessness of art as a badge of honor against the society they felt disconnected from.
And that retreat is precisely what Sartre is arguing against, especially after World War II.
Absolutely. That brings us to Chapter 4, Situation of the Writer in 1947. After witnessing the horrors of the war, fascism, the occupation, Sartre says claiming neutrality, claiming art is separate from politics, wasn't just wrong. It was morally indefensible.
Because choosing not to speak out is still a choice. It supports the status quo.
Precisely. Silence is political. Neutrality endorses the existing power by default. So the post-war call for Sartre was for a total literature, a literature of praxis, that blend of action and reflection. The writer must take sides on the big issues of the day. He mentions colonialism, injustice. Their role is to provoke, to disclose, to awaken the reader's freedom and responsibility, to be that critical conscience again.
Okay, let's try to boil this down. What are the key takeaways for us today? The first one has to be that core idea. Literature is commitment, engagement.
Definitely. And that just jumps off the page into today's world. Think about media outlets or even social media influencers claiming pure objectivity. Mm. If they consistently avoid challenging power or never really dig into uncomfortable truths, Sartre would say, hold on, that's not neutrality. That's a choice to uphold things as they are.
It reframes objectivity entirely. Okay, second big theme, that fundamental split he makes between prose and poetry.
Right. Words as signs versus words as things. And we can apply that framework, maybe loosely, to all sorts of content we consume now. Ask yourself, is this piece trying to point me through the words to a real-world situation, trying to disclose something and maybe get me to act? That's Sartre's approach.
Or is it designed to be just a beautiful, self-contained object, maybe an aesthetically perfect photo, a really catchy but maybe empty song, something to be admired for itself, but not really aiming beyond that, That's closer to his view of poetry.
It helps you analyze the purpose behind the content. Is it aiming for disclosure and potentially action, or is it more about aesthetic appreciation, maybe even distraction? The intention changes the ethical stakes in Sartre's view.
And the third theme, which feels like the anchor for everything, freedom is the core subject and goal.
Yes. The whole enterprise, from the writer choosing to write to you choosing to read and engage, it's all grounded in freedom. And therefore, the ultimate aim must be to promote and defend human freedom.
He had some powerful lines capturing this, didn't he?
Oh, definitely. The book is full of them. Like, one does not write for slaves. The art of prose is bound up with the only regime in which prose has meaning, democracy.
Wow. So for him, real literature needs a free society to even make sense.
Because it depends on that appeal to the reader's individual critical freedom. Totalitarian regimes can't tolerate that kind of open appeal. It's inherently challenging.
And that other quote really hits home, too. The writer's function is to make sure that no one can be ignorant of the world and that no one can say that he is innocent of what it's all about.
That nails the action by disclosure idea. Once the writer shows you something, names the injustice, you can't plead ignorance anymore. Your inaction, if you choose it, becomes a conscious moral position. The writer makes you aware and therefore responsible.
Which leads perfectly into how we might apply this. For anyone creating content today, writers, journalists, podcasters, YouTubers.
Sartre's throwing down a gauntlet. He forces you to ask, am I just entertaining? Or am I actually engaging with what matters? Am I taking responsibility for what I choose to show or not show? Or am I hiding behind the claim of neutrality because it's easier?
And for all of us as readers, as media consumers, this changes everything. It turns reading from something passive into something active. Critical.
You start asking different questions. When you read an article, watch a documentary, even scroll your feed, what is this creator showing me about the world? What are they asking of my freedom, my attention, my conscience?
And crucially, is this content asking me to think critically? Or is it asking me to just accept something, maybe even something unjust, without questioning? If it's the latter, it's violating that pact of generosity.
It encourages a much more engaged way of consuming information. And for us as citizens, it underlines why a free critical press, why free speech is so vital. Culture and art aren't just hobbies. They are where society debates its values and confronts its conscience.
So, wrapping up, what's one thing that really struck you from revisiting this?
For me, it's still the profound weight he puts on the reader. That idea that you're not just receiving information, you're actively participating in making the work's meaning, and you're implicated in his moral landscape.
Yeah.
That co-creator role is, well, it's a heady responsibility.
Yeah, it really is. And for me, it's that stark idea that writing is never an innocent act. It makes you pause and think about every email, every post, every time you use words to communicate. What am I choosing to disclose? What am I choosing to ignore? It really emphasizes that culture isn't trivial. It's a central battleground for ideas and values. So the final thought maybe to leave you with is this. If you, the reader, are truly a necessary co-creator of a work's meaning and its moral project, what responsibility does that actually give you when you put the book down or turn off the screen? What do you do with what's been disclosed? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.